Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We do have Nicholas Gerber, Mitchell Nicholas Gerber, Lionheart, on the radio today. We actually interviewed him earlier, so we're going to play that interview. And actually, it was such a long interview, we broke it up in two. So we're going to play the first part of our interview with him today, and then we're going to play the second part tomorrow. You're going to want to hear this. We get into the details regarding the Chinese Communist Party, how far they've infiltrated different countries in the world, suggestions of what to do, how far along are they regarding this live organ harvesting and other things that are going on, all about subjugation and the propagation of communism throughout the world. As you know, the show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show that provides you the academic evidence necessary in getting our country back on track and getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. So, as you know, we're keeping most of the fourth, looking ahead what the shows are. We're trying to be forthright on our website. So if you go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the Red State Talk Radio podcast page, that's where you'll find what's going on with upcoming shows, content, and so forth. We want to make sure that you understand that we do have a lot more planned, but just go there. That's where we want you to go, and that's where you'll actually be able to get and garner from, you know, what we're doing and what's ahead and so forth. So I don't want to get into all of that. What we want to do when we're in content is really focus. So the one thing I want to say regarding going to war, Iran, and all this fever, folks, these things are in motion. There's nothing we can do to stop this. And as a matter of fact, I see all sorts of speculation. Don't let these news cycles possess you. We need to focus on what it takes to solve the problem. You know, 9 times out of 10, most people can avoid being harmed, being hurt, or what have you, as long as you quit panicking. And in essence, what the news cycle does to everybody is it gets them so caught up in this, this is bad. And as a matter of fact, I've seen plenty of young kids really upset with the fact that we might be going to war. And, you know, I just put this in perspective and I want you to think about this. Go look at the Vietnam War. That was more of a conventional war. And how many men and women died in that war? A lot. As a matter of fact, a lot of American lives. And as we get engaged, as we get engaged more and more, you're going to find that there's far less casualties, far less deaths. Now, there are people that, you know, do get injured. got something in my throat. There are people that do get injured. There are casualties of war. We can't eliminate. I mean, how can you fight a war without casualties? Unless it's a political war. And still there are consequences and political casualties that are the, you know, byproduct of any type of war, whether it be political, economic, or what have you, people starving, so forth. But the bottom line is that the cost of war, even though it may cost us a lot in human life, human resources, and so forth, for our people, for our young men and women that are having to step in harm's way, it's dramatically decreased. We're so efficient and we're so technologically advanced. And I want to throw this out there for anybody that's a prepper, anybody that wants to check out and, you know, dig in and say, you know, I'm going to fight tooth and nail. We're talking about a civil war. All of this rhetoric and hyperbole. or hyperbolic speech. All of this is completely reactionary and emotional. It has nothing to do with real cognitive thought, because if you understand the technology and the sophistication of the warfare that our armed forces can employ, why would you even think you could survive? They'll find you, the technology they have in being able to find you, and I can't even talk about those things because I understand them. I've been in the intelligence community, and I've promised not to violate those disclosure agreements, unlike Hillary and other people in the State Department who have just casually and without any thought given away our secrets and so forth. Anyway, the fact of the matter is that we should not be concerned about whether we're going to war or not. We will not be caught up in a long war. And regardless of what happens, the only thing we can do, and if you're really worried about it and you want to solve the problem so that we don't have to play manipulative, you know, things, listen to this show. We talk about statehood and how America could abolish the UN and actually start allowing other states to come in. We could literally open up our doors and allow other nations to become states. It's not something that happens overnight and won't happen in a year or two. But in the process, what it does do is it does make these other nations territories to where we can actually step in and help them, like Hong Kong, Taiwan. Imagine that. Imagine American presence right off the shore of China, where we actually have the ability to intercept anything that they try to do. Anyway, we'll be right back with Mitchell Nicholas Gerber.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
All right, folks, we are back with Mitchell Nicholas Gerber, and welcome back. I know you're back in America for a little while. What the heck is going on regarding the fight against live organ harvesting and the growth of the Communist Party in China?
Well, great to be back on your show, GR. It's been a while, but thanks very much for having me. We have entered into an era of revelation. an era of exposure, and the confirmation of this evidence about this new form of evil that the communist regime in China has infiltrated on innocent people in terms of the forced organ harvesting is going to soul stir people once it's truly and fully unveiled. People have seen it by Hong Kong, they've seen it by Taiwan, they are seeing how the communist regime has infiltrated into America, especially on the left. But not many people have heard about the Falun Gong and the plight of these innocent spiritual meditators or believers who have been sent under watch by the Chinese military in cattle cars to state-mandated hospitals, their organs cut out of their bodies while alive and sold for massive amounts of profits. And I have a clip, actually, by the main investigators, David Kilgore and Ethan Gutman, on BBC Radio, and I would like to share it with you if I can.
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay.
An upsetting issue, allegations that have repeatedly been aired, that China plays a part in harvesting organs, mainly of executed prisoners. The numbers run to thousands every year. Organs then get sold on for transplants. It's always been vehemently denied by the Chinese government. But here in Britain, representatives of a campaign called Forced Organ Harvesting have been looking at the issue, and they've got as far as presenting their latest findings to the British Parliament. Two representatives join us here in the studio. Welcome to David Kilgore, former member of the Canadian Parliament, and Ethan Gutman, author of several books on China, who've both been involved in the investigations, are here to tell us a little bit more. David Kilgore, if I could start with you, what are the latest findings of your investigation? What are you closing in on?
That about 65,000 Falun Gong practitioners have been killed and their organs trafficked. There are other people too, convicted prisoners are killed, of course, but the thing that we're focusing on is the Falun Gong community. My colleague Ethan Gutman has done a lot of work on the Uyghur community. He'll probably want to say something about that, but yeah, there's no doubt. We have 52 kinds of evidence that this is happening. To give you the easiest example, the wife of a surgeon told us that her husband had removed the corneas from 2,000 Falun Gong practitioners in a 2-year period. So, I mean, there's absolutely no doubt in anybody's mind. We've got two books on it. We've got all kinds of.
And these, just to clarify, these come after judicial executions?
No, there's no judicial involvement in virtually all of the Falun Gong. That's the thing that nobody understands.
Okay, right. So we better clarify this, because we often cover the fact that China, of course, has one of the highest rates of execution, yeah. Judicial execution. It's their choice. That's what they do. And they're always there in the top three, along with Saudi Arabia and Iran. But this is something different.
Exactly. It's because a police signature is all you need to get sent to a forced labor camp. And then basically what happens is somebody from, it could be London, it could be Canada, goes over there for a liver. And there's a computer bank, and it says there's a match for you out in camp number 50. And somebody's dragged out of camp number 50 into an operating room. Their liver's taken out of them. It's flown to Shanghai, where you're probably waiting for your liver. And you come back to London with a new liver, and somebody has been killed like a lobster in a grotesque restaurant.
Hang on a minute. So you're not even saying, because, I mean, it's one issue, the judicial executions and the use of the cadaver, which I suppose in a certain legal sense is the property of the state once the state has killed the individual. But you're saying these are people being killed to order?
Precisely. And it's so, as you say, your horror shows how distressing it is. But yet it never gets mentioned that these are people who've been maybe giving out pamphlets asking them to stop killing Falun Gong, and they're guilty of nothing.
So that was Ethan Gutman and David Kilgore on the BBC in 2014. But reports have come out, and congressional testimony has come out, and more evidence has come out that at least 100,000 Falun Gong practitioners per year in terms of transplantation, forced organ harvesting cases have been confirmed. So it's absolutely no doubt, irrefutable, and it's just a matter of time when the world comes to know what China is doing.
Right, and so a couple of things that I garnered from just that little soundbite that you shared. First off is that China actually has a high rate of judicial executions. The other thing that I think is important that people need to garner is it sounds like the Falun Dong are being kept in a different type of status. In other words, their execution has already been, approved, or like a carte blanche approval on this whole block of citizens. And in America, we have this thing that it's unconstitutional to pass a bill of attainder, and it sounds like that's exactly what they have there.
Oh, it's a full-on genocide. It's like it's not the same as the Holocaust, but it is a new form of evil genocide that it's become a cold genocide. There is a hot genocide and a cold genocide. Let me explain to folks who do not understand that. A hot genocide is just wipe them out, round them up like they did in Nazi Germany. A cold genocide is a slow, weaponized, intentional genocide to seep into every aspect of society in order to normalize the killing and the forced harvesting and the dehumanization, the marginalization, the vilification, the demonization of a specific group. It's much, much more coordinated and takes a lot more time. With Nazi Germany, that happened over a period of a couple of years. With the Falun Gong, this has been going on systematically for 20 years.
Right, right, right.
Understand how organ harvesting could happen in China, GR, and to your listeners. It is crucial to understand that there is no limit to how far the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, will go to wipe out someone or something. And when the persecution started in July 1999, the Chinese regime called the Falun Gong, FALUNGONG, pronounced Falun Gong. Announced that it was the biggest threat to national security since Tiananmen Square 10 years before. And today they are more vehement and terrified than ever. And the official Communist Party documents recently issued have stated that the competition against the spiritual movement Falun Gong is a principal means of competition for the hearts and the minds of the masses. And the former Chinese Communist Party, the former leader, Jiang Zemin, who started it all, when the persecution began, he was seeking a way to consolidate his own power while also eliminating the largest movement of thought in recent Chinese history. So to achieve his goals, he knew he had to do one thing more than anything, and that's weaponize hate. So the key to carrying out the persecution, the forced organ harvesting, has been to instill hatred in the masses of Chinese citizens towards the Falun Gong. And with the largest propaganda network in the world, the largest military, the largest amount of people, he launched a campaign of villainous lies and slander, at least $1 billion a year to slander Falun Gong and then create a multi-billion dollar profiteering organ harvesting extraction project to send hundreds and thousands of Falun Gong practitioners, send them to state mandated hospitals and kill them while they're alive, a little anesthetic just to hold them down, because if you don't give them anesthetic, it takes four people to hold them down. So just to hold them down and then extract the organs, the corneas, the skin, the livers, the pancreas, everything that needs, it can make money, and then sell the bodies and embalm them and then sell them off to the body exhibitions that has been founded and was founded by a German fellow and is now making $60 million off the cadavers in the body worlds and exhibitions around the world. So this is no doubt a new form of evil.
Oh, absolutely. And so that's a lot of information to digest that you just gave us. But a question that's prevailing in my mind is that the Falun Gong are kept in these prisons. And the fact is, because we're talking 300 million plus, right?
100 million plus, yes.
Oh, okay. I thought it was about 300 million. Is it because they've been killing them off? Or because I thought the number a long time ago was about 300 million.
By 1998, government estimates, Chinese government estimates were about between 70 and 100 million. Okay. By the persecution of 1999, there was about 100 million. About 100 million. The numbers haven't grown so exponentially because of the persecution and the brutal fear that has been instilled into the Chinese people.
Right. I mean, so it's illegal. It's illegal to be Falun Gong.
Yes, it's illegal to practice Falun Gong anywhere in society of China.
And
yes,
that's the same thing with Christianity too, right?
Correct.
So exactly. Anybody that is picked up for religious, violating the religious bans, they don't go through a judicial process like I forget the gentleman. It wasn't Ethan, but it was the other one, I think. So they're just picked up and sent into a political prison so that they're on hold until somebody needs their body parts.
Exactly. 100%.
Okay. And, now, are they going after Christians as well?
House Christians, Uyghur Muslims. I'm sure the listeners have actually heard about the Uyghur Muslims. At least up to 2 million have been detained in concentration camps. So that information is coming out.
So maybe that's how I got to the 3 million. If there's 2 million and a million of Falun Gong, then that's 3 there. But so it sounds to me like these numbers are rising, maybe not on the Falun Gong side, because everybody is, well, fully intimidated that the state will just arrest you if you practice any form of religion.
True. However, and I need to be careful because the investigators are still investigating, and this is such a huge number of people, the genocide that is going on. We must be careful with the numbers, and especially...
That's fine.
You know, presenting. But they, at least 100,000 transplants a year have been conducted. As you heard with David Kilgore in 2014, at least 65,000 Falun Gong practitioners were killed for their organs. But the numbers are much more than that.
Right.
But we just need to be careful in terms of assumptions and exaggerations.
No, I get it. But they are, at the rate of the organ harvesting, they have only got a few years of product. And I'm going to guess that, China probably has no problem with lying and deceiving anybody. So I'm sure that they tell everybody that every organ you're getting is from a 20-year-old when it could be from an 80-year-old that's pretty much spent. But nevertheless, the real problem is that this is really hard to trace because they have these political prisoners distributed throughout China.
Well, the thing is that when Falun Gong, the question can be asked, why target the Falun Gong? Why? What was so special about the Falun Gong? Why the communist regime realized they could make a fortune off their organs? Because between 1992 and 1998, when this particular spiritual movement, very similar to Chinese yoga, yoga's taken the West by storm, Tai Chi, martial arts, why Falun Gong? This particular spiritual modality was the life force of China with slow-moving 5 exercises and its philosophy based on truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance. So you would see hundreds and thousands, if not millions of people, 10% of the population growing annually every year up until 1998, all walks of life, all classes as well, practicing the exercises morning, noon, and night, and living more of a peaceful and considerate and compassionate frame of mind. So when the mind and the body are aligned, you become more peaceful, more happy, you got good business deals, you are better in your family. So they saw a whole change in character and morality of the Chinese people, not to mention the incredible physicality and social and psychological benefits documented by the Chinese Medical Research Society. And they were unbelievably amazed how such a spiritual practice in such a short time, just through word of mouth, could do such an incredible effect on the body and the mind. And with this information, the Chinese Communist regime's leadership under the former president of China, Jiang Zemin, he grew very jealous and hateful that he couldn't control so many minds and hearts of the Chinese people, that his legacy was being overshadowed. Not to mention making a fortune off the organs. So he launched this Final Solution campaign, and on July 1999, started to round up and literally target any Falun Gong petition, 100 million people by 1998. And so this is where you get your specified date. On a specified date, finding organs. And people couldn't believe it. And when they realized that this was going on, with the irrefutable evidence done by the investigators, the phone calls into Chinese hospitals, Chinese doctors coming actually out, like Enver Totti, who I sat down with in Westminster Abbey, talking about this and sharing about how serious this is, the world started to take notice. And actually, 4 months ago, the China Tribunal on Final Judgment in 2019 came to the conclusion this was absolutely going on. That for decades, China has been accused of killing prisoners of conscience to sell their organs for transplantation. This has been going on since 1995, GR.
Right.
But because of the influx of people practicing, particularly the Falun Gong, ramp up of this evil started to ramp up in 1999, 2001. And by 2005 and 2006, David Kilgore and David Mattis came out with the during the Canadian Parliament briefings and media.
Right. And as a matter of fact, I believe we have those videos on our website because you sent those. And as a matter of fact, you were sitting in the room in, I think, one of those at least.
Yes, I was, of course.
All right. Just to be clear, I made a mistake. I think I said 1 million. It's 100 million.
Yes, 100 million Falun Gong petitions.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And what you're saying, I understand that the former president of the Communist Party and president of China, whatever, felt that there was a threat, but it doesn't sound like the Falun Gong were a threat. It just seemed like they were just a little bit happier, and you'd think that in living in a communist state, you'd want people to at least be happy living there. But it sounds to me like it was, like you said, it was about control. But it wasn't. I can't understand why they were necessarily a threat unless they try to figure out how to seize control either of the movement of the religion or what have you, and they were just unsuccessful. So if you can't control it, then you get rid of it.
By living in a communist state, you have no freedom, you have no personal rights, you have no private property, you are owned and controlled by the state. Not like America, which is a normal society where you have checks and balances, you have the right to bear arms, you have the freedom of speech. You can talk about how you hate Trump or you love Trump. It doesn't matter. Or you hate your president or you love your president. You have the right to protest. You have the right to press.
Right. And people don't fathom that. People here have so many liberties and privileges that they can't fathom that you have no rights to do that. Eldridge Cleaver, I don't know if you know who he was.
No, I don't.
He was a Black Panther that went on the lam because in a firefight in the early 70s, there was a person killed, and he was a part of that action of, you know, active shooting and so forth, and they wanted to bring him to justice, and so he actually went on the lam, went to Cuba, and was living throughout all these different communist countries, and he came back in the 80s and turned himself in, and he said he's more free in prison in America than he was in any communist country in the world.
Correct.
And he spent the rest of his life trying to make up for and trying to get people to wake up to what is going on with communism and its growth here in America. So anyway.
If I may add.
Go ahead. Absolutely.
Absolutely. You nailed it. And if I might add, with Falun Gong, also known as Falun Dafa, after being introduced to the public by Mr. Li Hongzhi, who is the founder, and now he's an American resident, and wanted to, he had a bounty on his head for $300 to $500 million. Trump was just given by the Iranians an $80 million bounty.
But
Li Hongzhi, Mr. Li Hongzhi, who is the founder of Falun Gong, has been, the bounty has been at least $300 million. But more than 70 million people by 1999 had taken up the practice. With its core principles of truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance, there was a growing popularity in the hearts of the Chinese people. And So why did the regime begin to violently target the Falun Gong? And there are three main reasons, actually, GR. The size of its following made communist leaders fearful of losing control of the people's hearts and minds.
Okay.
Its guiding principles were not compatible with communist ideology, which the party had forcibly imposed on the Chinese people during the Cultural Revolution.
Okay.
And in addition, the certain communist officials saw Falun Gong as an easy target and used its vilification as a tool for their own political advancements. So with China's State Sports Commission estimated that at least 70 million people were practicing Falun Gong in 1999, this outnumbered the membership of the Chinese Communist Party at the time, a fact that didn't sit well with the party leaders. And communism is a very evil authoritarian ideology. It's like all or nothing proposition. So its goal is to control all aspects of public and private life, including religion and spirituality. For example, in China, churches, temples, and even health practices are allowed to operate only under the control of the Chinese Communist Party. But Falun Gong operates independently of communist thought and control, and this they could not tolerate. And the vast difference between Falun Gong tenets and the Chinese Communist Party's ideology is officially atheist and Marxist, which was another factor in some of the upper echelons of the party that could not tolerate the Falun Gong. Because with Falun Gong, it conveys the belief of God and spirituality and divinity and traditional values, which was decimated under the Cultural Revolution. 5,000 years of Chinese divine traditional culture and family and heritage and traditions were wiped out under the reign of terror under Mao Zedong, where 40 million Chinese starved to death, and you had Dao Xiaoping. And then now Jiang Zemin, who was the former leader. Now President Xi is just putting the nail in the coffin. I mean, he's just become the dictator. So, those were the many reasons. And one more reason, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Then party leader Jiang Zemin personally launched, planned, and executed control over the campaign to eradicate Falun Gong, even though members of the Politburo advised him not to do so. But by all accounts, he was incensed by Falun Gong's immense popularity, and he saw it as an undercutting of his own legacy, and he expected to eradicate the practice within 3 months after the start of his campaign. He saw it as an opportunity to boost his authority, and by painting Falun Gong as an enemy of the state, a cult, an evil terrorist group, the president of China, Jiang Zemin, hoped to mobilize the country into a struggle with himself at the helm, and therefore consolidate his power. And a lot of this evidence came through the article a CNN senior China analyst, Willie Lum, wrote about this. And he says he seems to be using the mass movement to promote allegiance to himself, Jiang Zemin, the president of China. So this has been going on for 20 years. And then on top of the brutal persecution, the investigators, and only me, I mean, I started to practice Falun Gong. I'm a Falun Gong practitioner, even though I come from a Judeo-Christian family. It's not a religion, Falun Gong. It's a spiritual movement. It's helped me tremendously. I'm just teaching my mother right now, actually, the exercises, because she just had gallbladder surgery. She feels wonderful after practicing. Everyone does. And there's no, you know, dogma, whether you're Christian, Muslim, Jewish, doesn't matter. It's a spiritual practice of good exercises and a great philosophy. University taught in all religions, Christianity, Judaism. When we've heard about the forced organ harvesting, I mean, we were shocked, and it hasn't come. I don't think people can really fathom what is going on, even by listening to me talking about this. It's hard to believe that this is going on, but this is going on.
Right, right. So one of the things that is just kind of like an automatic, when all of a sudden the government outlaws something, then it creates this intrigue by people. It's like drugs. The government outlaws drugs, and all of a sudden kids, you know, to be bad, they want to try that. But the question I have is with the growth of the Falun Gong in China, and now all of a sudden the banning, outlawing, and arresting, and captivating, and imprisoning the practitioners, how has the movement grown in some of, and what I want to do is I want to talk about the Chinese states, or I should say these rogue states. Now, we know North Korea is a rogue state, but I believe in Southwest Asia, and I always thought that Vietnam governmentally is quasi-controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. Is that not correct?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay,
exactly.
So, and what other countries in Southwest Asia are being controlled by the Chinese Communist Party?
Oh, from Cambodia to Thailand. I mean, you got...
Is Thailand now under their control, or is Thailand still an independent state?
It's under the military. But yet, because of the foreign direct investment that is poured into these countries, even, for example, Africa, I mean, the amount of money, you see what the communist regime has done, it's an imposter, it's a demon, it's a specter, a reign of terror.
Yeah.
And what happens is it's like a fungus, it's like a parasite. It's a blood-sucking parasite. So it will go into a country. It will, first of all, give foreign direct investment because it has the most amount of money now compared to any other country. Thank God Trump came in to stop the bleeding and to say, no, it crippled China, thank God. And now, you know, China and Russia and Iran are starting war drills. But they're not going to get too far because they – anyway, that's a whole other story.
Right.
But
right,
what
right.
I was saying is that the communist regime is it's a parasite. It will go into a country. It will give foreign direct investment from the slave labor and from the consumer market after all these years. 1.3 billion slaves working like slaves to provide for the consumer market in Europe, in America, in other countries in the world.
Right.
The cheap labor from Walmart. I mean, you can see that, the cheap product. That money is being used to take over different countries.
Right. And so has the Falun Gong movement gotten into the Southwest Asia, because obviously you're in Vietnam, you practice this, right. So it's not outlawed in Vietnam yet.
So I'll tell you a story that I was working on. I was invited to work on exposing the Chinese regime and forced organ harvesting in Vietnam, in Hanoi. And we actually got shut down for security reasons because we were doing so well. We were nicknamed the Eastern Wind. Because we were using viral videos and production means to bring out the message. And we were doing so well, we became the third largest television station in the world, NTD TV, New Tang Dynasty mm-hmm. Television, and the Epoch Times. Now, the Epoch Times, Trump loves. I mean, we are the source of news. I mean, I'm sure you've heard of the Epoch Times,
yes.
New Tang Dynasty Television. This is where it all started. This is Falun Gong members exposing this horrendous genocide. I mean, it was created by the Falun Gong. It was created by Falun Gong Dachuan, the Chinese newspaper, the largest Chinese democratic newspaper outside of China. And then it became English-born in New York. And we were doing the branch. We had a branch in Hanoi, but it had to get shut down because the communist regime sent spies and special agents to bribe the Vietnamese Communist Party to shut us down. So we had to shut down.
So they didn't shut down the broadcasting. They just basically shut down your content.
They tried to, but we went into hiding. So we've got cells all over.
So they actually tried to come after you then, pull the plug on you, but say, hey, give us these folks, turn them over to us.
Yes. This is a gangster regime. I remember sitting down with the Federal Bureau of Investigation in Atlanta, Georgia, where the CDC is. Atlanta, Georgia, where I am actually right now visiting my folks before I go back to Vietnam in a month to do work there. This is a strategic place. I sat down with the Federal Bureau of Investigation because I had death threats and assassination attempts and the communist spies coming after me because of my work that I've been doing for the last 20 years, you know. And I've been in this game since 2001, my friend. So, I'm Lionheart. I like to put everything on the line and give the Chinese regime a run for their money. And I put myself on the back for being blacklisted from China. It's interesting that I haven't been blacklisted or escorted out by the Viet Cong yet in Vietnam, and
right.
I hope that won't happen. But it will give me a nice little rush. I like these kind of rushes with touches with danger, faces with danger. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But it's good to fail to support the good and to fail to expose evil is unacceptable. And God hates a coward. So yes, But I'm in the States right now, and we'll see what goes. But The communist regime is on its last leg. It's running for cover. It is about to collapse socially, politically, economically. Communism is going to die. And we're going to usher in a whole new era of democracy into China. You can see in Hong Kong how they are flying the American flags. They are singing the American anthem. They are pledging allegiance because you are seeing full and in real time, watching the Hong Kong protest, how lucky we are in America to have the freedom and have the Second Amendment.
Right.
And they're trying to take their Second Amendment away in Virginia. That's where ground zero is with gun confiscation. And the Hong Kong people are saying, wake up, Americans. Look what you have. Stop being so goddamn lazy and so unappreciative. And especially on the radical left and the liberal university students. Wake up. Stop being so stupid.
Wake up and
politically correct and all this mandating. You can't say this and you can't say that. And I remember a time of a loudmouth American speaking in his mind, saying what he felt. And now in America, people, the silent majority, especially Trump supporters, are scared to speak their minds. Well, I say go at it.
Right.
Give them hell. Johnny Reb. Give them hell. You know what I'm saying? Send them Yanks straight to hell. I'm in the Confederacy. I love the Yanks. Don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying.
Okay.
This is what the communist regime is doing. This is what happened with the Iran conflict. They taunted Trump. They taunted him and taunted the deep state with Obama and with Hillary and with John Kerry, urged the Iranians to test Trump and say, listen, we're going to walk all over him. But look what just happened. He hit the top general and he's fighting him and saying, no, you ain't going to start anything with us. But Iran's not the problem. Russia's not the problem. Trump knows full well about what China's up to. He knows full well what this communist regime is doing. And that's why with the socialism, which is disguised as cultural Marxism and communism, liberalism, which is communism, it's cultural Marxism in a nutshell, will not destroy our great nation and destroy our republic. And I tell you, Trump was a godsend to come in and save the republic, save the Constitution, save the Bill of Rights, and save the Second Amendment from the communist cultural terror of the Chi-Coms, the globalists, and the international banks. And that's what I also will tell you right now. God bless Alex Jones and InfoWars for being the resistance, for being the hero, exposing this even more so. I went on Alex Jones and I talked to him, and I talked to also Leanne McAdoo from InfoWars. And after that, they received one of the largest cyber attacks on InfoWars, after I exposed, and they let me on the show. So I'm grateful that we're making a dent, GR. So I hope you won't get a cyber attack. But thank you again for letting me come on the show and speaking and sharing with your listeners about the seriousness and the truth of what is going on.
So actually, just to share with you before we go to a quick break, I've actually had interruptions in connecting to when I do my broadcast. So there have been times when they're on their end and my end, we can't figure out why we're not able to connect. And so I've had to rebroadcast shows or what have you. But if you would please, because there's a lot of other things I just wanted to ask you about, like these other Southwest Asia Communist Party states, or I should say the links that China has with all these other different countries. I want to talk a little bit more about that and the Falun Gong, as well as I want to actually talk to you about what I believe would be a great opportunity to really put a spotlight on this. So can you stick with us for a few more?
With pleasure.
Okay, so folks, we'll be right back after this.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in
the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so I'm hoping that you're recognizing the importance in this conversation. One of the things I understand, as a matter of fact, if you look at the art of the deal, if you look at negotiating, buying something, negotiating contracts or what have you, the essence and the whole point in the negotiation process is trying to use leverage to get the lowest cost possible on buying an item or to get the best advantage for yourself or your organization in so that you make money or what have you. In essence, it is about who has the upper hand at the table. In other words, let's say it's about a food product. Let's say it's, you're going to eat. And obviously you can, go into this establishment, or this establishment. They're all out there saying, come here, eat here, eat here. And go, I'm a veteran. Who's going to give me a discount on my meal? Next thing you know, they all do. And then you say, I'm also, elderly or what have you. It's all about using upper hand at that table of negotiations. There is no doubt that the leaders of all of these countries out there that are subjugating themselves to China is not doing what is best for the people. And as a matter of fact, they're not doing anything in support of the people. It's all in support of subjugating them and getting them it's all about taking care of them. These leaders love their people and they're there to take care of them, just like what happened in Venezuela and so forth. Next thing you know, you've got blight and you have real problems. And so it's all about upper hand. As a matter of fact, the voice of the people is no doubt being suppressed. And the upper hand is actually speaking to the people and calling on them to say, hey, why don't you guys have an election? This is why I'm presenting this whole concept of statehood to the people of these different countries like Hong Kong, Taiwan, and so forth. This is what would really stir up the people. And guess who is going to have to deal with that? And as a matter of fact, they will try to posture. They will try to say, what the heck are you doing? And I want you to understand this. They want to go into the form of public opinion and try to say we're the bad guys in trying to subjugate these people when in fact, we're not the ones doing that. And just think about this, especially if they know the U.S. is up for allowing new states into the Union. All of a sudden, we start broadcasting this concept. Hey, our doors are open and our arms are welcoming anybody who wants to embrace liberty and make the necessary changes to your life and your country, and embracing, our language, our currencies, and so forth. That would drive the world leaders crazy. How would this shift the bargaining at the bargaining table if China sees their control slipping away from Hong Kong, Taiwan, and many of the countries they are playing in Southwest Asia? Why do we think that the UN is the only governing organization open to admitting free states, when in fact they're not opening free states that come to them are actually being subjugated by them, because they're saying, well, you have to adhere to our laws and our treaties, and we're going to come in and take care of. And I'm going, are you kidding? They use American money, by the way, in, subjugating countries by giving them a little bit here, giving them food. That comes from our pockets. So speaking of the bargaining table, why are we obligated to subsidize the UN and the growth of communism? We're not. Why do people think that the good Lord would only want us, Americans, to be able to enjoy liberty? Why would anybody think of the world that was the whole plan, that only we would have? As a matter of fact, no, they're trying to take our liberty away from us too. Folks, we have been played, and we have been played well. And I'm just telling you, there are so-called world and country leaders who have been suppressing freedom, and our progressive presidents over the past century, well over the past century, were culpable in doing this, like Teddy Roosevelt. It's about nationalism. And if you look at some of the nationalism presidents that we've had, Roosevelt, Wilson, FDR, and so forth, we've gotten into wars not to free people and allow them to become a state in the United States. Well, we're going to free you, and we're going to let you have a failing government so we can come in and bail you out again. The progressives call what is going on colonialism. But if you look from the beginning of our Constitutional Republic, America and the United States has never really been an empire builder. We've only been successful because all of these territories, people immigrated to America to be a part of this, and they immigrated to these territories and so forth to become a part of this nation or this republic of liberty. We have been the exact opposite of colonialism and subjugating people and taking their wealth. If you look at Portuguese and Spain and how they actually just extracted the wealth away from the people, we're nothing like them. We're nothing like Russia. We're nothing like China. We are on the high road here, folks. And so we'll be back tomorrow with the second half of that interview with Mitchell Nicholas Gerber. I hope you've been enjoying it. We've even got more to expound upon in these whole concepts of statehood. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.